today on the Travel Guys.
Hang on, I'm not ready. In the travel news, you can now call places in Yosemite Park by their historic names again, and a local attraction succumbs to over-tourism. Details coming up next.
You're not ready?
Well, I wasn't ready. I don't know. I was daydreaming here, and the news ended.
We've had 7 days.
I know.
When you're buying airline tickets, there's a rule that you can cancel your ticket within 24 hours and receive a refund, no matter what. Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Mark, of course, has found an exception to that no matter what rule. Going to share the findings along with a quick dip into the mailbag at 3:20.
When we travel, many of us use Wi-Fi to stay connected. In a hotel, we hook up to their system and we feel safe. You may feel safe, but you aren't. Robert McGarvey joins us at 3:35 to explain why you should never use Wi-Fi in a hotel.
Gwen Duncan was with us last week helping us avoid travel problems. Now back again this week with part two, this time talking about hotels that lose reservations or give you the worst room in the house. That's at 3:50.
It's a few minutes past 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon in Sacramento. Welcome to the latest edition of the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to paradise.
Up to Alaska. I go north to Russia's own.
All I want one man and man.
I come from a la-la-la-la.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks.
With the show.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys here every Sunday, 3 to 4. Mark Hoffman to my left. I'm Tom Romano on my right.
You can't be on your own right.
We're here. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, whether they like it or not.
If you can find Tom anywhere in the building.
Yeah, just there you go.
Tell him back he's over here on the right.
Well, good to see you again, my friend.
Nice to see you.
By the way, we didn't get a chance last week to talk about your previous trip, the previous week, where you take a wonderful group of Sports Leisure Vacationers
to Puget Sound.
And I know that's one of your favorite places of all time. Tell us about it.
It is. It is. We go every year. I really highly recommend that as a destination, particularly in the summertime, but also in the off season. Because if you go up to Puget Sound and you get a really pretty day in the off season, why, it's really just as spectacular of a place. Of course, the fact that they get some gray days there every once in a while, like, you know, maybe 10 or 15 in a row in the wintertime. But in the summer, it's beautiful. We stay at a place in Suquamish, which is one of the native...
Suquamish.
It's over near Bainbridge Island on the west side of Puget Sound, and see all the little towns around there and stuff. We had a good time, so...
Well, I think I sent you a text. My wife and I have decided that that's going to be one of our next destinations. And then I think I asked, when's a good time to go? And you said now, which would be the best weather wise. Is that correct?
Well, and also they grow lavender up there, and it's lavender harvest season now. So that makes it a nice time to go. Of course, everybody and their uncle is up there at this point. So, you know, you want to try to avoid weekends if you can.
What's the shoulder season?
The old shoulder season in the Pacific Northwest used to be September and October.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gotten so crowded in the summertime that a lot of people have said, gee, when can we come when it's really nice? And they've discovered that what previously was the shoulder season in the Pacific Northwest should have been the peak season to start with. Because September and early October is the best time to go up there. And you lose some of, so we say, the underbrush. The families traveling with children, and those of us who don't have children, God bless people who do, but we don't necessarily have to travel when they're all around.
Underbrush,
yes. And that's always been a great time to go, but now it's become just as busy. And, you know, we've talked about over-tourism. We're about to talk about another story about that here in just a minute. And so really and truly, I would tell you that the springtime is the best time to go up there. May, perhaps the first week of June. It's still going to be crowded, but won't be quite as crowded as it will be the other times of the year. Of course, it's people who plan like a one-day trip to Seattle or Puget Sound are sometimes disappointed. Like we were up there week before last, and the weather was kind of spotty. It was around 70 degrees. We had a little bit of rain. It was a little, gray on occasion. But of course, we're all from Sacramento, and we were coming back here for 2 weeks of ick or 2 months of ick. So, 70 degrees with a little humidity hanging in the air, we thought that was just perfect.
Right. Okay. Well, all right, then. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And certainly been quite a bit. It seems like every night when I turn on the news, there is some travel-related story almost every time.
There's a couple of things that people probably picked up on during the week here, but in case you didn't, I'm going to mention them because one of them really ties into something we've talked about a lot here. Daffodil Hill, which is a small family attraction in the Sierra foothills, where we have been taking people at Sports Leisure Vacations. We've been taking them there for 40 years. It's a family farm, and they plant a ton of daffodils and keep them up. And people go in the early spring when daffodils and tulips and some of the early spring flowers are blooming and see them. They don't charge a fee for it. It's just a pretty place, and it wasn't designed to make money or anything, and it got on social media. And this year, the first weekend at the end of March, it was so crowded that, and of course, the ground and stuff is still, pretty wet and stuff. So people are parking in all kinds of screwball places and really messing up the terrain because it's not really ready for that type of visitation. And so the family closed the attraction after the weekend and then didn't reopen it, and now has pretty much decided that they may never reopen it again because they just don't have, it's not a facility where they charge a fee and they're not interested in doing that. So I thought, we could get them on the radio and have them talk about it. But then I thought, actually these people have been bothered enough probably, and probably aren't interested in being bothered anymore. So maybe we'll wait until the off season and I'll contact them and see if they have any plans to reopen.
Well, here's the downside, I guess, of social media and the ability to spread the word so rapidly about a local destination that is so beautiful and so popular and becoming too popular, too overcrowded, and then the demise. I don't know. What can you do?
Well, I'm not sure what the answer to this is, although for this particular attraction, it would be difficult, but for some attractions, more and more, they are going to things like time-dated entry. And even if they don't charge a fee to get into the attraction, they charge you a couple, $3 for the ticketing fee because to have a ticketing company costs money.
Right.
And they have to make money on selling you a ticket, even if it's a free ticket. So then you get people to come at a particular time. The problem with that is that there's no such thing as spontaneity. You can't just show up. Because if you show up, you're not going to have a ticket. You're not going to get in. Also, then what happens is there becomes a secondary market on these tickets. And, a free ticket ends up costing you $25 because somebody figured out that that it had a value on the secondary market. So I don't know exactly what the answer is. There are too many people chasing perhaps too few attractions. And it's now, with social media, a little bit easier to tell people what's going on. And that's a problem. And this could lead to another problem with our next story right here.
Okay. Oh,
this could lead to another problem.
Let me look at this. Yeah. Okay. This Mark has a fixation. Luis, you know what can you see that from in there?
You see that?
Can you see what that is?
It's betcha.
Yeah, okay.
You betcha.
Have you ever crossed your mind,
Luis? I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener.
Go ahead.
That is what I truly like to be, because if I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
Okay. You happy now?
From like I was nine, I think.
I know. would it ever cross your mind, Luis, that wouldn't it be great to spend the night in the Wienermobile?
In the Wienermobile.
Okay.
I cannot say that it has.
Maybe Mrs. Luis would think that was a great way maybe to celebrate your anniversary or something in the Wienermobile.
Okay. Into the story, Mark.
Or you think maybe, no, I don't think we got to. We need to ask Mrs. Luis, I think, on this.
I agree.
To see. Anyway, you can stay overnight in the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile.
No, I can't.
It is in celebration of National Hot Dog Day. Oscar Mayer is making its iconic Wienermobile available. 27-foot fiberglass hot dog on wheels. It said how much it was here. It's like $135 or something. It's actually $136 a night in the Chicago area.
Is that before resort fees?
It has a spacious bed, which can convert to a couch, a sitting area with two comfy recliners, and a mini fridge stocked with
Wieners.
Wieners, you betcha. And all the Chicago-style hot dog essentials, an outdoor picnic space, and an adjacent bathroom. The Wienermobile apparently does not travel with its own.
That's great. Does it have Wi-Fi?
I don't know. Anyway, they're taking reservations. I think that's cool.
Is there a location? Is that happening?
Chicago?
Oh, in Chicago, yeah. Of course. All right.
Yeah. No, I think it's.
Well, there you go.
I think it's pretty cool. Wait till Mrs. Luis finds out about this. She's going to be all.
Are you going to try to book a stay?
I don't know. It just seems like it's kind of fun.
I think you should.
You know. All right.
If you'll go, I'll pay for it. I'll kick in the $135 plus resort fees. If you you could use some points and fly there.
I might do that just because you're so cheap, and if you were willing to do that.
I would. Only if we can do a broadcast from the Wienermobile.
From the
Wienermobile,
I see. The travel guy's live from the Wienermobile. All right. Back to some more slightly more serious stuff here. A few years ago, Yosemite National Park changed concessionaires, which happens occasionally. The concession contracts are usually for 10 or 15 or 20 years. And when they're up, they're open to bid. And in this case, Yosemite decided to change from one really bad concessionaire to one that was really worse, in my opinion. Delaware North Company left, and apparently in their contract, they had it fixed so that the longtime trademarks of Yosemite Valley went with their contract. They were genius to do this. And so things like the title of the Ahwahnee Hotel and the Yosemite Valley Lodge and stuff were owned by this concession company now, which no longer had a contract to operate in the valley.
That's why the name changed.
And so there was a settlement in the lawsuit. Yosemite sued.
Uh-huh.
So Delaware North, which was one vendor, has given the trademarks to the new vendor, which is an equally crummy company called Aramark. And I only say that because of the quality of the food, the service, the things like that. And so those service marks now belong to that company until their contract expires. And then if they don't get a renewal, they will revert to Yosemite National Park. So the Ahwahnee Hotel is once again the Ahwahnee Hotel, not the historic Yosemite Valley Hotel or whatever they were calling.
Okay.
In the meantime. So that was a kind of an interesting story during the week here. Los Angeles International Airport. This should be interesting to you, Tom. They have new germ-fighting security bins designed to deter bacteria buildup.
There we go.
At Los Angeles International Airport. So if you're traveling through LAX and you're going through security and your life is miserable, just think you can't get tuberculosis anymore passing through security.
I really, really avoid LAX whenever possible.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's a very wise thing. Video of airline passenger using feet to operate in-flight screen horrifies Twitter. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you go to travelguysradio.com, among other interesting things you will find there is a video of a man who is in a bulkhead seat, obviously in first class. And he is changing channels with his feet on the wall. Yes, perhaps the most disgusting thing that I've seen on an airplane in a while.
I guess if his feet were clean,
that wouldn't be as bad. But
he might go blind. Oh, no.
Yeah. The Marriott CEO testified before a committee last week about their resort fees. And he tried to tell them, we've got an article about this on travelguysradio.com. He tried to tell them that resort fees were just like baggage fees and that people had gotten used to them and they were okay with them. And, I suggest we attach a resort fee to his foot and light it on fire. and don't give him any method to put it out. Watch him run around the room. Anyways, lots of good things at travelguysradio.com, including the video of the airline passenger using their feet to operate the in-flight screen and all kinds of interesting things like that. And that is your travel news for today.
Okay, and again, visit travelguysradio.com for all the cool stuff that Mark mentioned. Always have links to our special guests there as well. And at Travel Guys Radio, there's a place where you can leave a note for the Travel Guys. In fact, if you've got a question you'd like us to answer, particularly Mark, who is truly the travel guy, I'm the guy that knows the travel guy and knows very little about travel. So Mark will be in the next segment.
But knows a lot about radio.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is why this all works.
There you go. Mark is going to answer some of the mailbag questions that you've sent in, the kind of questions that pretty much everybody, you know, comes through your head once in a while. So stick around. I think you're going to learn something. That's next here on The Travel Guys.
I'm on my way.
Welcome. It is Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, your official travel and entertainment guys, here every Sunday, 3 to 4 on 93.1 FM and 1530 AM KFBK. And it's time to dip into the Travel Guys mailbag.
Mm-hmm. The first question comes from a guy named Mark Hoffman, who says, I understand that you have 24 hours to return a plane ticket after you've purchased it, but does that always work that way? And no, Mr. Hoffman, it does not. Mr. Hoffman apparently discovered last week when using an old credit from a United ticket to purchase a new ticket, and then finding out within a couple of hours that, whoops, made a little mistake there, need to change this ticket, called back United, and they said, oh, not so quick, Mr. Hoffman. You can't change that ticket because despite the fact that it's within 24 hours, you used an old ticket to buy that ticket. That ticket was bought more than 24 hours ago.
Right.
So you are locked in.
And did they point to the location of where it says that in their rules and regs?
Well, they didn't. First, I wet my pants and threw a temper tantrum and said, well, you know, the lady didn't tell me that using this credit locked me in immediately, because he said, you know, that's part of our policy, is to tell you that this is different from other tickets. Make sure that this is what you want, because as soon as I hit buy, you own this ticket. You don't get the 24-hour change. So anyways, he was kind enough to, I have some status at United, and so that's, I guess, the reason that you have those frequent flyer things and stuff, is you get into a situation like this, occasionally the airline gods will smile on you.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy did. And so I didn't have to pay the $200 change fee. But he said, I'm putting a note in your record that we've done this for you. He probably was lying. But if you ever do this again, we will know that you know that this is the rule.
Yeah,
and
so, we'll do this for you one time.
So I went online and I tried to track down the rules on what this 24-hour hold and cancellation policy is. And there isn't anything that says any place that if you use a ticket credit that you've put yourself in this jeopardy situation. However, I will also admit there isn't anything that discounts that.
Well,
so
you might have to look at where when the rules that have to do with what you can do with that credit, perhaps somewhere in that other bank of rules, it says that this credit cannot be used for the 24-hour thing.
I'm going to call the good people at Southwest next week and report back on next week's show, and I'm just going to ask them. I'm just going to say I have a credit. I'm getting ready to buy a ticket.
Okay, that's a great idea.
Do I get 24 hours, ahead of time? And I may even call American or Delta. I probably won't call American because they're just a total waste as an airline at this point in time. You should see the things that come up on online advocacy sites. United, which held the top spot for a couple, 3 years of being the crummiest airline, has been replaced by American.
Really?
Big time.
Mm-hmm.
At least half the complaints now are about American Airlines and goofy things that they're doing, or something strange happens and then they don't handle it well. So they turn a situation where people are already not very happy with them into a 20-hour delay or, something like that. Or they tell people that the plane is canceled and people don't show up at the airport and the flight takes off on time. I mean, that actually happens.
Ooh.
So, it's kind of goofy.
Not
okay.
Good.
So people have asked a mailbag here. We've said we're going to get to this. We've just got a few minutes here. Next week, I promise, we are going to set aside some time to answer all of your questions. But one person asks here about baggage fees. They say apparently baggage fees went up over the winter from $25 to $30 a bag, they're asking, and that is correct. Now it's $30 to check a bag. What recourse do I have if I get to the other end? I'm paraphrasing here. He's got a long letter about how he went on a trip and he got to the other end and his family had 6 bags, only 4 of them showed up. And they were going on a cruise. They had 2 days in Miami before the cruise left. The airline, well, we won't mention names, American, that told them that the bags would be there within the next morning, the next afternoon, the next evening, etc. It got time to leave on the cruise. Well, because the airline told them that they were going to be able to get their luggage and kept telling them this, they didn't bother to go buy other stuff. So now they're 2 days into their vacation and they're getting ready to sail on a cruise ship and they've got no clean underwear, basically. And so this guy is like, you know, what recourse do I have? He said American Airlines isn't even, they refuse to refund the baggage fee. And he says, don't they have some kind of obligation to refund the baggage fee? So, yes, I put him in touch with Chris Elliott's website. And because on there they have a list of people that you can start appealing to. You start at the bottom, send them a polite letter, wait a week, send another polite letter, wait a week. So this guy is doing that. And we'll find out. He didn't get an answer the first time, so he sent a second letter now. And he's basically, all he's asking for is the $60 back on the baggage fee. I mean, which really, he really has probably the right to get a lot more than that. He's not asking for American to pay for any of the clothing he had to buy or anything. He just says it's a matter of principle. You didn't deliver the bags. I paid you to deliver them there, and so I want my money back. And does that seem unreasonable
to
you?
No, that is absolutely reasonable. And I can't even believe that this is a discussion.
It absolutely is. Okay, here's another letter from one of our travelers. Was on a plane recently. One of the travelers was misbehaving. Flight attendant came down the aisle. Person had obviously been drinking. Continued to give the flight attendant some grief. I was thinking at that point that maybe I didn't want to be on that plane with that person because they decided to let the person stay on the plane. What is my recourse if I get off the plane? So I checked with the FAA, and basically it's kind of a situation-by-situation call. If you decide to get off an aircraft and the flight crew has decided to let somebody fly and you feel your situation that you're in danger, you're going to have a hard time getting a refund on that ticket. What they suggested is get off the airplane, immediately talk to the people at the gate, tell them what your concerns are, what your worries are, document it immediately by writing to the airline's Facebook page in real time and tell them that this is really happening or this just happened just now. I got off the plane. I was afraid to fly. They said in those situations, you are likely to maybe get a little bit, you are more likely to get a response, but that if you wait, basically you've taken away the airline's ability to sell the seat. And so they may not be very responsive, but if you are on a plane and you're not feeling safe, ooh, that would be tough. Also, turns out misbehaving on a plane could cost you big money. Let's see here. UK, $130,000 for diverting a plane. Here's United Airlines is sending somebody a bill for $324,000. So if you get drunk or you misbehave on an airplane, it's entirely possible that the airline will come after you. And if they do, your financial condition could take a real downward turn in those situations. And there's a few mailbag things. When we come up back, we're going to talk about how dangerous Wi-Fi is in a hotel.
Well, not dangerous. It's going to hurt you.
No, not
dangerous. But it could hurt you if somebody hacks in.
If somebody hacks in and gets all your stuff.
All right. That's coming up next right here on the Travel Guys. Don't forget, travelguysradio.com. See you right after the news. Hello there, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Follow along at travelguysradio.com. In this segment, we're going to address a couple of issues. Hotel Wi-Fi, is it safe? And we're going to talk more about the movement to do something about those annoying hotel resort fees. Mark?
Exactly. And we're going to talk to Robert McGarvey here. Robert, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Robert is a journalist, podcaster, speaker. He's a travel guy. And a couple weeks ago, he wrote a wonderful column about hotel Wi-Fi and the dangers of being on hotel Wi-Fi and some of the reasons that you should be concerned about it. And after reading it, I had seen things like this before, but after reading it, I thought that, Robert, you did an excellent job of telling people what the real dangers were here. And then once we get done with that, you had a wonderful column on the whole Marriott resort fee. They're trying to defend themselves, and you had some great commentary there. So I'd love to get to that if we have a minute. But the hotel Wi-Fi up front, tell us, Robert, what are some of the inherent dangers that people are accepting when they log on to that hotel Wi-Fi?
My basic advice regarding hotel Wi-Fi is do not use it ever. The reason is that most hotel Wi-Fi systems are very easy for professional hackers to hack into. They've been hacked in from the time they started the Wi-Fi systems. And you might say, well, why are they easy to hack into? It's because hotels generally have not invested the money it would take to keep the security up to date. And security is an ongoing war. You know, you put in some defenses today, the clever hackers figure their way around them. So by tomorrow, you have to upgrade a little bit more. It's not how it works in hotels. They don't want to keep that continuous investment. They want to put continuous investment in their bar program or their food program or what their lobby looks like. Who the heck knows what security protection, computer security protection looks like? It's not glamorous. So hackers have been hacking in. Why do they hack in? Because A, it's easy. B, people in hotels have money. Definitionally, you're not poor if you're in a hotel. You have a credit card. Wow, you're great. Steal some of your money. You probably won't even notice it for 30 days. What's sad about this is that the traveler has so many options. With your cell phone, you can create what's called a hotspot that you can link your iPad to, your computer, whatever. And the Wi-Fi, the internet signal is as good as you're going to get from the hotel Wi-Fi, maybe better.
If listeners, if you're not familiar with the what we're talking about here, hotspots, you can pay a few dollars a month to have, in essence, to turn your telephone into a cell tower. So when Robert's saying, well, don't use the hotel Wi-Fi, and you're saying, well, I'm in the hotel, what am I going to use? Well, you can, in essence, turn your cell phone into your own cell tower, and then you would never need to use the hotel Wi-Fi wherever you go, as long as you had a strong signal on your phones.
With the hotspots, are they a lot more secure, or can they be hacked as well?
They are vastly more secure. Will I tell you that no one can break into a cellular data hotspot? I will not tell you that, but it's vastly more secure.
Robert, do you have any other suggestions for our listeners besides the cell phone hotspot? Is there any other solutions to not using hotel Wi-Fi?
Sure. Many companies require traveling executives to use what's called a VPN, a virtual private network. And they're available to the public, usually it costs in the vicinity of $10 a month. A VPN is, I don't believe, as secure as the cellular hotspot, but it's pretty good. And as I say, many big companies require traveling executives to use it. And they wouldn't do that if they didn't think there was some value to it.
We're talking with Robert McGarvey, journalist, podcaster, speaker. Robert writes for a website called Joe Sent Me, which is where I found Robert's stuff. We're talking a little bit about hotel Wi-Fi and talking about the dangers of logging on to hotel Wi-Fi, how it is so easy for hackers to get into. Robert, shift gears just a minute here before we wrap up our interview. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the resort fee situation. You penned a column here in the last couple of days about the Marriott folks going and trying to defend the charging of resort fees in their hotels. And you had some fairly pointed commentary. Share a little bit of that situation with us, if you would.
Well, with a resort fee, basically you're asked to pay $20 to $50 for a bundle of things that you probably don't want. Pool access, the use of the hotel gym, maybe a bottle of water. Water's probably your best part of the deal. In any event, so there you are. You're paying $150 a night for the room. Now you're asked to pay an extra $25 that no one told you were going to have to pay. Now Marriott defends that. Their CEO said in a statement that it's just like the checked baggage fees on airplanes. Everybody complains about them, but what can you do about it? Well, I've been traveling for many years. I've never paid a checked baggage fee. I'm cheap. I don't believe in it. I just use carry-on. Works for me. It's gotten very, very, very hard to not pay a resort fee. 10 years ago, you could talk your way out of it.
Yep.
At the check-in desk. It's very difficult to do it now. I personally have not succeeded in some years. People tell me they have the same experience. And what's happened is that the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., the Attorney General of D.C., filed suit against Marriott. And what I've heard from experts in the field is that suit's interesting, but it may not be decisive. What will be decisive is if other state attorney generals begin to file suits against hotels for resort fees. And if you're an ambitious attorney general, you ought to, if you're listening, take note. This is Sacramento. Maybe there's an ambitious attorney general. File suit, dude. If you want to be governor, this is a winning proposition. Consumers will love you.
in the old days, if you were a top-tier elite with a particular hotel chain, they wouldn't charge it to you. Or and even I used to, as a tour operator, be able to pretty consistently talk my way out of resort fees for groups. And that I can only do that now with about 50% success rate. Sometimes you can get it reduced a little bit. But the point is that these fees are for things in many cases that used to be free. One Marriott hotel was cited in the D.C. lawsuit about commenting that their resort fee covered parking at the hotel, and that research showed that parking at the hotel had previously been free. So it is a cash grab. It is a cash grab like the airlines did to us with the baggage thing. But at least when they took your bag and put it on the airplane, you felt like, well, they're transporting my bag for $30. It used to be free, but at least I'm getting something. At many of these hotels with resort fees, you get virtually nothing. And the things that you're given are either worthless or things that you previously got for free. Robert, do you think other attorneys general will take advantage of this opportunity and put forth something here? Or is this man just going to be alone on an island?
No, there's rising belief that some ambitious attorney generals will file suit, a similar suit. Because this is, I remember there was a now out of the Senate, Claire McCaskill, who was a U.S. Senator from Missouri, tried to get the Federal Trade Commission to investigate resort fees 2 or 3 years ago. And I believe she introduced the bill in the Senate. It didn't go anywhere.
She did.
But this has been an issue because essentially you're being forced to pay a surcharge on your hotel room for stuff you probably don't want. And it's stuff that if it were available a la carte, you'd say, I just don't want to buy any of that stuff. And that's just not cool. It's wrong. It's like you check you're flying an airplane. And they say, oh, by the way, you're paying $7 for the movie. You say, I already saw the movie. Too bad. You're going to pay $7 for it.
Yep.
It's not a good thing. And if you ask hoteliers why they do this, I've never heard a coherent or intelligent response. I just figure we're so dumb, they might as well pick our pockets for $20 or $50.
Well, and what's happened is that over the years, in the beginning, there was a lot of public outrage. But you're right. As time has gone by, there becomes more of a grudging acceptance. People like you and I's point to the whole thing is that the hotel room that looks like it's $159 is really $189. And you're not finding out that until the last minute. And of course, booking.com just recently said, well, fine, you're going to charge a resort fee. We want our commission on the resort fee, which is another reason that the hotels have done this, is because they were able to set aside a piece of their revenue and not have to share it with other folks. So the battle goes on. Robert, I really appreciate your commentary on these two things, which for those of us who are road warriors, resort fees and hotel Wi-Fi are probably in the top 10. If you don't have Wi-Fi at a hotel, you're in big trouble. And the resort fees are just an ongoing irritation to those of us who travel a lot. Thank you for your time today, my friend, and we will talk to you again soon. I will keep reading.
Thank you.
And don't forget now, take a moment, visit travelguysradio.com. Links to our guest, as well as a lot of really cool stuff waiting for you there. Coming up after the break, Gwen Duncan's going to join us. What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about what happens when you get to the hotel and they say, huh, we've never heard of you before. That's coming up with Gwen Duncan on the Travel Guys next.
Well, it must be Sunday because the Travel and Entertainment Guys are on the radio. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano with you, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as we promised last week, Gwen Duncan is back to help make you a smarter traveler, Mark.
Well, Gwen last week was talking to us about what happens if you lose your passport, your wallet, your credit cards, particularly when you're traveling internationally. And if you find yourself in that situation, how you can get out of it. This week, the second half of her how to avoid it or how to get out of it when you're traveling, Gwen is here to talk. We're going to talk a little bit about hotels. And the first topic, Gwen, that I wanted to cover is on your list here, what to do when the hotel loses your reservation. You get to the front desk of the hotel and you say, I'm Ms. Duncan, and my husband here, Ron, is here, and we have a four-night reservation, and you slap your confirmation number on the counter, and you can tell from what the person's doing on the other side that things might not be going real well. They keep looking at the screen and punching more things, and they look at somebody else, and they pick up the phone and talk to somebody, and they punch the screen, and you can tell something is wrong. They've lost your reservation.
This happens probably more frequently than one would like.
Ouch.
But the way to prevent that is that immediately after you have made the reservation, whether it's through a travel agency or online, contact the hotel to confirm.
Really?
Confirm, yes, confirm it, because they could have lost it. You could find other things, too, like maybe you made a mistake in your typing and put the wrong date.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this could be really simple things. But once you've got that confirmation, make a copy, and you will keep that with your documents, in your luggage, or anywhere that you can, and on your itinerary. You should, and they've got some software that you
could
put that
in. You could book the wrong hotel, too. That's why it's really important. For example, here in Sacramento, we have a Hilton Garden Inn that's been there for a long time in Natomas, just over the bridge off of from Richards Boulevard. Another Hilton Garden Inn has now opened two or three exits down closer to the airport.
That's
so
right.
One's North Natomas and one's South Natomas. And if you weren't paying close attention online when you booked one, you might book one and think you booked the other and show up at the wrong hotel.
Yes. And if you have your reservation, the confirmation with you, then that'll be pretty obvious.
Well, you know, when you book a hotel or an airline or a car rental, they send you an email. You know, the first thing you do is sit down and look over that email with a fine-tooth comb. My advice is you create a folder on your email, which you can access through your phone. You drop it in the folder. You give it a name, you know. Vegas Vacation August, whatever it is. And then periodically you can go back and take a look. And when you get to the hotel, if there's any questions, you can pull it up and show it to them right there. So that's my little tip.
I think it's good.
You would both be surprised how many times. I just had this happen with a group that I took to Puget Sound. We got the day before we're to go to the airport. I'm triple checking everything, and I see that I go to check them in on Southwest, and it won't check in the way that his name is listed on my sheet, because somehow his name has been messed up. It was messed up on the confirmation we sent the man several months beforehand. But he didn't look at it carefully, and he didn't notice it. And, I mean, it was our mistake. I'm not trying to blame the customer. But the opportunity to correct it was there. And it's amazing how many people, they get these confirmations in the mail and they don't look at them. And if they looked at them then, or even if they looked at them 24 hours, one of the things that I would
suggest, inside of 24 hours,
well, is like for Hilton and Marriott, if you've got the app, it will prompt you, it's time to check in for your hotel room. If Marriott doesn't prompt me, that's a real bad sign. Also, all of your stays are in your app. So these are things I'm trying to explain even to older people, to be concerned about the fact that getting that app on your phone really makes a huge difference. Having the app for the hotel and the airline that you're using makes a huge
difference. It really does. It really, really does. But you can avoid so much by just preparing better from your home.
So you're there, and you've got the confirmation and everything, and they say, well, I'm sorry, but we don't have a room for you. Now what happens?
Well, before you cancel it, you want to make sure you can find an available room.
So check in ahead of time.
Check in ahead of time. Because take your confirmation with
you. If you try to check in 24 hours ahead of time and it won't let you check in, that's a sign of a real problem.
Yes.
Take your confirmation with you. Perhaps consider reconfirming with the hotel.
Yes.
Particularly if it's a multiple night stay.
Yes.
Or if you're asking if online when you reserved it, you said, you know, we need a crib. Or we need some special services, maybe calling to confirm that they have that.
Yes.
Your roommate's arriving before you do, and you want them to be able to check into the room. Okay, so what happens if you get to the hotel room and you hate the room?
Oh, that happens a lot. Talking with Thomas happens a lot for him, too.
Well, I'm just real picky.
Yeah.
Well, that's no fun. We stayed one place. In fact, it was a big-named hotel. We got in there, and there were nylons in the bed. It was everything. And so we went back, and we kept complaining, and they kept saying, we're going to get you another room. We kept complaining, and finally we got our room at 3 o'clock in the morning, went to the manager, and
it
waived. But there are other reasons to not like your room. You get in there, and you paid for a balcony, and you find out you got a picture of somebody's roof. You know, I mean,
so this is where, once again, having that confirmation confirmation comes in handy, yes, because it will say, and also being careful because maybe you thought that you were booking the room with the great view, but the button that you pushed and your confirmation shows right. that you have the view of the
but
alley.
But you could have done it right, and then they're just giving you the lowest ball that they can, you know. But there's some other things that you can do. The pictures that they have in the hotel sites, don't believe them always. Mm-hmm. Don't believe what you find always in TripAdvisor. There's another one is called Oyster, uh-huh. another site called Oyster. I looked that up, and those are professional pictures by professional photographers, and you can get the real lowdown on what the room is
okay,
really
like. Okay, quickly here, we have about a minute. Lost luggage. You're in a foreign country. Your luggage doesn't show up.
Oh, gosh. And this happens, unfortunately. You go to the airline office. It's right there, you know, where you collect your luggage.
Okay.
You have to have the address for the hotel you're going to be at. Unless it's you're arriving home, you have to have all this documentation so they can get it for you. It could be that it will be missing forever for your entire trip. Then you'll have to check with them to find out what you can do in the absence of your luggage. But you have to file a report, and they will trace it. They'll even tell you where it went.
In many cases now, again, this is where you have that app on your phone, because in some cases you don't have to call the airline. It'll show you where your bag is. It may not make you happy, but it'll at least show you where
you can retrieve it.
Well, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you may be able to access it at a point along the way. It's at the airport, and it's going to be 24 hours before they can deliver it to you, but you can go and get it. The other thing I would suggest to people is that maybe the possibility of taking with you, I carry an extra pair of underwear and toothbrush.
Always.
In my briefcase.
In your carry-on. Yes.
In my carry-on, yeah, because if I can brush my teeth and change my underwear, I feel like that I can make it through the next day. So whatever's important to you for survival on the road. It might be your favorite package of crackers or your favorite candy bar.
Yes.
Make sure you bring that with you. Gwen, thank you so much. Valuable information once again. We'll see you again in a few weeks when you have something else. And if someone needs a travel advisor, they can contact you at?
Thank you. At gocytravel.com. My phone number and everything's there.
Okay. And you can find a link at travelguysradio.com. Thank you, Gwen.
As always, Gwen Duncan with some great stuff to make a smarter traveler. A couple of things I wanted to mention for those that have already missed it. You know, today is National Ice Cream Day,
uh-huh.
and we were talking.
You didn't bring me any.
I know. I what do you make me feel bad?
Well, no, I just you didn't bring. Also, this moon celebration.
I can run down to the.
Did you know Neil Armstrong didn't actually say one small step for man? He said one small step for a man.
Amen.
Did you know where that line came from?
No, I didn't.
He and his wife created it. He is from Wapakoneta, Ohio, which is a small town in northwestern Ohio. And there's a museum there and stuff that we'll tell you all about. But he was a very shy, quiet man. He was not a person who really, and even after all this happened, he was not a person who capitalized on mm-hmm. His fame and fortune. Kind of interesting. An airline, KLM in India, this is the Dutch airline and their Indian office, sent out a Twitter, just what you always wanted to hear from an airline, advice on how to pick your seat based on fatality rates.
And the airline actually pushed this out as a tweet, huh?
He sent this out. And so it's kind of morbid, but since it's here,
the safest place, making you a smarter traveler,
that's our job here. The safest place is the back third of the aircraft.
And that's where you're least likely to die.
You're based on studies of accidents, the back third of the aircraft. Now get this.
Yeah.
This is really crazy. The middle seat in the back third of the aircraft, which is by most people considered to be by far the most uncomfortable. If you tell somebody you've got a middle seat in the back third of the aircraft, they're going to elicit a sigh. But according to this, analysts found that the seats in the back third of the aircraft had a 32% fatality rate compared with 39% in the middle, 38% in the front third. They also found that the middle seat was slightly safer than the window or aisle seats. It doesn't say why. Here is a completely correct guide. We're going to have to post this online. A completely correct guide for reclining on an airplane.
Okay, the correct
when
guide.
When you should, and mm-hmm. I'm going to keep this, mm-hmm. and I promise we're going to talk about that next week, because the complete guide, Chris Elliott is going to be with us next week, and we're going to talk about, he has written some things about basic economy airfares, which the spread on those, which was like $20 when it started, now is like $50 or $60. So a lot more people are buying these basic economy tickets and then getting to the airport and finding out, oh my God, what have I done?
Have you noticed that a lot more airlines and a lot more basic economy fares are becoming available?
Basically, every airline now has or will have basic economy fares, almost every airline. And Southwest, interestingly enough, says they don't have and will never have.
Well, that's because Southwest is almost exclusively kind of basic fare anyway.
Well, it is, but they don't advertise that their fares are $9 like Spirit or something like that and say, oh, well, we forgot to put the taxes in. Of course, it's more than $9. I mean, that's just deceptive advertising. Why would you do
Well, that's why like Southwest
that?
Is, you know, the
well,
kind
so
of
Chris
the
is going to come next
category.
Week and talk a little bit about all of that stuff and where he thinks it might be going. And we'll probably talk a little bit about resort fees since he's hot on that. Boy, I hope that we're on our way to seeing that go away. You have a nice week, Mr. Romano. Remember to dance like nobody's watching. And I will see you here next Sunday at 3 o'clock.
All right. Thank you, my friends. You stay well. A happy National Ice Cream Day. And we'll see you next time.